Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show Europe. Today, Mourinho, Mourão. We talk the decline and fall of Jose's Roman Empire. Also, Spain, Real's Desert Storm, and Basque teams back. All right. Also back, Bundesliga, Jadon Sancho, and Ligue 1 with that super tight title race. So much in store in this Totally Football Show. Listen, it's Tuesday, 16th of January, a day that will forever be etched in history for reasons that we'll be getting into ever so soon here in the studio. Hello, Alvaro.
Hola, James.
Big week for you. Could be a day etched in history for you, Alvaro Romeo.
Oh, yeah, the 17th of January.
Oh, it's tomorrow, yeah. Yeah. Another Romeo.
A little Romeo.
As if there weren't enough.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would that be an Alfa Romeo? What?
You've done that one already.
Are we doing that? Really? I can't remember.
No, we did that already. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
No, we've got new listeners since then.
Do you know the amount of people who ask me, literally, for real, is your second surname Juliet? And I am like, why should that be?
Why should that be?
Yeah.
But seriously, Alpha as a first name would be great. No?
Your
would
be son Alpha.
Alpha and Beta.
You're giving me ideas.
Yeah. Nice. Raphael Honigstein's also here. Hey, Raf, aren't you?
Hello, James.
There you go. And back from Marbella, were last week. Yeah. And Jules is here.
Bonjour.
Bonjour to you, Jules. Who's not here? James Horncastle, that's who. It's all right. It's not much to talk about.
No, exactly.
Not much to talk about
him.
From Italy.
We don't need him.
No. Yes, of course. This Tuesday morning, news coming of Roma firing Jose Mourinho, a.k.a. the special once. We will be hearing from James Horncastle later on when he gets to his VIP airport departure lounge, because he's also leaving Italy this morning. He was over in Milan to see Christian Pulisic, and he caught...
And he saw, obviously, Roma's... Mourinho's last game.
Well, what would have been his last game if he hadn't been suspended as usual?
Again.
Yeah.
But then he can go fly back to Rome for a special.
Indeed. Maybe that's where he's going to fly. We'll ask him later on. Right now, though, Rafa, I want to know your moment of the week.
Well, James.
There are many.
Did I come to you too early on?
No, not at all.
Could be a bit of football, could be a restaurant, whatever
you want.
There
were quite a few big moments in German football because it was the first week back. But I think the most important one, perhaps for the whole season, possibly, happened in Augsburg. Because Leverkusen, who were short of quite a few players, either injured or at the Africa Cup of Nations... They toiled and struggled on an icy pitch against an awkward team, and it's 0-0. And you think, okay, this is the kind of result where things might begin to unravel. But Ezequiel Palacios found a 94th-minute winner.
Kommt der Ball zurück auf Florian Wirtz, quergelegt auf Jonas Hofmann. Hofmann auf Grimaldo. Flachpass! Und Tor! Und Tor! Und Tor! Und Tor! Und Tor! Ezequiel Palacios! Ezequiel Palacios!
And they were celebrating like mad, like winning the league almost. But it felt big because the narrative in Germany is already written about Leverkusen being bottlers, about running out of steam because of their historic failures in the past to win the Bundesliga. So for them to actually turn that narrative on its head and win and show the belief and the confidence, the character to keep pushing and finding a winner the way that perhaps Bayern usually do late on, I think has perhaps frightened one or two people.
Never say Leverkusen again.
No, they're in a fantastic position. 45 points, James, from 17 games. that's really incredible. And 91 is the record that Bayern once managed. So they are nearly on course for a record-breaking season.
Incredible. Very nice. Alvaro, your moment of the week.
There are many in Spain this weekend, but my favorite one, and we're going to make amendments for last week, because I remember that we were talking about a very bad Panenka penalty. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
In French Cup, yeah.
Yeah, in French Cup, yeah. We're going to talk about a very special penalty.
Okay.
It's by Lucas Ocampos. Mm. I don't know if you've ever seen a no-look penalty,
ooh,
but Lucas Ocampos did that the other day. Sevilla lost. Sevilla is next to relegation, but the technical move of Lucas Ocampos, I think that it deserves some praise. It deserves to be the moment of the weekend for
me.
Where
did he look?
He looked at his right, which is where the linesman is, basically. Yeah. But I don't know who did he look at. Maybe he just didn't look at anybody else. Uh-huh. He just did that gesture, but it looks unbelievable. And the TV angle was sensational as well, because you could see the goal, you could see Ocampos from his back taking the penalty. And when I watched that, I was like, did I see this? Did it really happen? And I had to watch the replays a couple of times just to believe it completely. But wow. Yes, I've never seen this, and I wonder if there will be some repetitions of this, iterations of this in football from now on, because, you know, it looks very cool.
And
you have
to make it 2-2, right? So it was an important goal, although they then conceded in added time to lose, still lose. But at that time when he scored, it meant a lot.
Yeah. Sevilla with as many wins this season in all competitions as they've had managers. So well done to them there. Right. Jules, what about your moment of the weekend? There
Saturday,
were many in France this
there
weekend.
There were many, of course. Yeah. Obviously, coming back from an NBA week for me, so that could be my highlight of the weekend.
So you went to the NBA in Paris?
I did, yeah. Mm. And I did.
What
the
was
coverage.
The highlight of that for you?
It was to be on the coverage of TNT here in the UK.
Wow, nice.
None of you because watched it, but it's okay, it's fine.
What you in a Chiringuito, you a year ago.
Ah, so that's true.
I've done my part.
That's very true. Yeah. It was amazing to do the some punditry outside of football that we usually do that you know comes kind of more natural to us, but to do the analysis on an NBA game was in Paris as well was pretty cool. So okay. That was it. But my moment of the weekend football wise is obviously Reims going to Monaco and win, not just win against Adi Hütter and his team, but just destroying them despite a lot of players out for Reims at either AFCON or the Asian Cup, and they were magnificent. So Will Steele, who is listening to the show,
well done
to you, brother. And then at the end, Teddy Thomas is number 10. Very kindly taking the mic a little bit by doing an impression of how Will Steele talks, you know, when he mixes French and English.
Oh, yeah?
We did it!
It was really funny, so everybody lost. But they deserved it because it was a very, very good win. And they're sixth. They're only 5 points behind the Champions League position. So
lovely goals
amazing
as well.
Yeah, lovely, lovely goals. You're right.
Well worth checking out Reims there, that win at Monaco, wasn't it?
At Monaco, yeah.
Very nice. Good. Excellent. Well, loads to talk about. Let's begin by seeing if we can get hold of James Horncastle in an airport lounge in Italy.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Joining us now, live from the departure lounge at Linate Airport, it's James Horncastle. All right, James?
Jimbo.
Yeah.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, indeed. Wow, what a day, eh? Is Jose there in the departure lounge with you?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not in Fiumicino's departure lounge down in Rome. Mm. I'm up here in Milan. But yeah, he will be packing his bags and departing,
right.
emptying his office. And remember, James, he was flown in personally by Roma's owner, Dan Friedkin, 2.5 years ago. Wonder if Dan Friedkin will fly him back. We'll have to see.
Well, we certainly will. How shocked were you at the news, James, and what made it come this Tuesday morning?
So I was shocked because they have been unconditional in their support of him, I would say. If you think back over the last 2.5 years, some of the moments of ignominy, you know, like losing 6-1 to Bodo Glimt, things like that, really, not qualifying for the Champions League every year. But, you know, he delivered a Conference League title, which was Roma's first trophy in 14 years. People turned their noses up at that. But it was a trophy, and that's all Roma fans wanted, and it's all that mattered to them. Reached the Europa League final last year, and this made Mourinho incredibly popular with Roma's fans. You know, I think he replaced the vacuum left by Francesco Totti. And so I think it was going to be a very hard decision for them to not extend Mourinho's contract. Even though results in the league, the worst results in more than 20 years, would suggest that was the rational thing to do, sack him. And so it's a courageous decision. So that's why I'm surprised that, given his popularity among the fan base, they've done it. But I'm not surprised on the grounds of the kind of results that they've been getting that they've done it.
Okay. Some signs, especially in the last week, though, that fan base was beginning to turn.
Yeah, and not surprisingly, because, James, they lost in the Coppa Italia, they went out, and they went out to Lazio as well. And yeah, Jose has played Lazio six times. He's lost four of them, drawn one, and only won one. And so, you know, that is something that often Roma fans will judge their season on. You know, it's been okay when they've been winning a trophy or reaching European finals while Lazio have been finishing above them in the league. But to lose in the manner that they did against Lazio, and for Lazio also to win at the weekend, which that game happened before Roma played Milan at San Siro, and just being around the team in Milan at that time, you could really feel that there was a lot of pressure going into that game, knowing that Lazio have all of a sudden started to win five games in a row. And yeah, you mentioned the fans, James. I mean, they'd been unconditional in their backing until really this week. And then there was a banner outside the training ground in Trigoria which says, better to die with dignity than live in humiliation. Mm. I think that was it.
Okay.
And yeah, so quite strong. Strong words there.
Strong indeed. Are you sat next to the buffet area there at the VIP lounge?
It is to my right, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Nice.
Can you hear the clinking?
No, not at all.
You can hear the cutlery.
How would you rate then? As you mentioned, back-to-back European finals, although there will be those who say they shouldn't have been in those competitions anyway. The idea was Champions League.
His lowest, do you remember I told you before James came in, the lowest win percentage in Mourinho's career.
Absolutely.
Only 1.7 point per game.
Right. He has brought through young players. He has filled the Stadio Olimpico in a way that I can't remember seeing for a long, long time. But then again, you've got games like Bodo Glimt. You've got moments, if we're going to talk about the really dark times, all the red cards that he's picked up, his fifth that prevented him from managing this weekend in the game against Milan. Are Roma better off without him?
I think so. I don't think all of the fans see it that way. I think they're still... they still can't believe that their team was coached by Jose Mourinho for 2.5 years and that they were able to attract the likes of Lukaku and Paulo Dybala to the club in that time. But yes, I think they've been allowed to be mediocre in the league. They should be qualifying for Champions League or at least making a better fist of qualifying for it than they have done recently. And I think financially for the club, not qualifying has been very, very tough, particularly when you're paying Mourinho's wages, you're paying Lukaku's salary, you're paying Dybala's salary as well. Yeah, financial fair play, they're in a very tight situation because of how they've run the club in the last 3 or 4 years. So, yes, I do think it was right. I think they should have separated already last summer.
Mm. And who do you think will be taking over?
Well, it looks on a caretaker basis that it will be Daniele De Rossi.
Daniele De Rossi.
Season, nice. So his people have exactly. So his people have been talking to the club over the last 24 hours. I think it will be a very popular decision with fans because he's gone from El Capitano Futuro, the future captain, who was supposed to take over the armband from Totti, to El Allenatore Futuro, or Presente, by the time this. This podcast drops, but the thing is, as with Mourinho, it's a very popular decision. Whether it's the right decision, I don't know. Whether, for example, let's see if De Rossi does well, they'll probably be forced to take an interim appointment into a permanent appointment. They don't have a sporting director from February at the moment. Thiago Pinto is going to leave. So, you know, on the one hand, it will keep the fans on side, but it might just be another emotional decision that puts them in some difficulty going into the summer transfer window and next season.
All right. Well, we look forward to finding out more. James, have a safe journey home and we'll catch up with you next week.
Cheers, guys.
James Horncastle by the buffet at Linate. Yeah. Airport.
It's one natural Italian habitat.
Yes. Indeed so. Indeed so. And a man who's going to have a lot on his plate now, because he'll be writing about that for The Athletic, of course, all the backstory, all the thoughts going forward about what this means for Roma as they wake up from what the Gazzetta dello Sport described as their kind of, they got drunk, Roma did, on Mourinho, and now they're having the hangover. What do you think happens next for Jose, though? This Tuesday, there's going to be loads of supporters across the UK and beyond, especially those with short memories, going, oh, Jose's available. I wonder what it would be like if he was to take over.
Nobody would do
that. I bet
that.
A lot of Newcastle fans.
Chelsea?
Might
really? Why?
Chelsea? Nah, maybe some on. Man. I don't know.
He's done.
Okay, what? Do you think whatever that's true or not, I'm pretty sure that whenever he gets unveiled as the new manager of the club, there will be a hype around him, for sure. But there is one reality that Jose Mourinho and his defendants have to face. He hasn't qualified the team for the Champions League since 2018. And this is very important because Roma sacked him basically because he was not going to meet the financial
necessities
that the club needs by qualifying for the Champions League. And he hasn't done that for 5.5 years now.
It's not out of the question. They're 5 points off the top four, but the kind of trajectory they're on, I guess the club felt we need to do it now while it's still a possibility. Do you think the name Mourinho is still going to carry cachet? Can you think of any clubs that might go for him?
Not in the big five leagues.
Is it Turkey for Jose?
Turkey or Saudi Arabia or a national team. But Brazil have just appointed somebody because Brazil would have been very interesting to him, and I'm sure they would have been keen on him. They've appointed last week Dorival Jr., so I don't know if that could be finished already and then for Mourinho to come in. He's turning 61 at the end of the month. He's really not any special anymore. I just don't know who would want to give him a job like of this caliber, of the Roma caliber, for example. I mean, in the last two and a half years, have you seen a good Roma performance collectively? Have you enjoyed watching them? They've played terrible football. They have the third highest wage bill in the whole of Serie A, and they can't even, like Alvaro said, qualify for the Champions League. I just think he's been a disaster. Apart from the Conference League triumph, okay, fair enough. But apart from that, it hasn't been good enough.
The thing is, international football is about knockout competitions and ties. And I think that Jose Mourinho has still proven that he knows how to prepare a team for an individual knockout against any club. And he did it in the Conference, he did it in the Europa League last season. It was a penalty shootout what separated Sevilla from Roma. So I think he may have a future in international future for sure. But when it comes to the league and when it comes to the point tally that Jules has explained, I mean, with a point tally of 1.6, 1.7 at Roma, you're not going to qualify for the Champions League. And Jose Mourinho's habitat was supposed to be the Champions League, and it hasn't been for a long time now. And the thing is that the day-to-day counts a lot to qualify for the Champions League. And it looks like Jose Mourinho is not capable of getting good runs as he did in the past with Real Madrid, with Chelsea, or, you know, with Porto.
I think he can bring glory to Al Etifak.
Replace Gerrard.
No, he's talked about coming to Saudi Arabia at one point. Anyway. Now that might speed up his plans a little bit.
All right. Well, that's for the future. Up next for us today, we're going to be talking about Spain.
For most of us, January means New Year's resolutions. But for the footballing world, January means one thing: transfers. There's a lot going on, and to stay on top of every move that matters, you need the Athletic Football Podcast.
They were prioritising somebody like Mason Mount.
5 days a week, we'll help you cut through the noise with the most reliable reporters in the industry. David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, Laurie Whitwell, and many more will not only tell you what the deal is, but how it happened too. So make sure you don't miss a single transfer beat in January with the Athletic Football Podcast. Listen for free wherever you get your shows and hit follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Ahí va Vini, pierna derecha Vini, toma carrera, manga Vini, chuta Vini, gol! Y gol, 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 gol! Hat-trick de Vinicius!
Real winning the Spanish Super Cup after a week. Alvaro Romeo that sent out a bit of a warning, I would say, to teams not just in La Liga, but across Europe. Two enormous performances from Carlo Ancelotti's side. First off, that semi-final derby with Atletico.
Spectacular. A great game, 5-3. 3-all after 90 minutes with terrific performances at both ends because Antoine Griezmann's goal cannot be forgotten either. I mean, it was beautiful too. But Real Madrid came out as a winner because they have done it many times and this time they showed their character again. In the semi-final, they did it. It was like a fight with no gloves by two boxers, really. I mean, they went full at it. Defenses didn't dominate the game. It was the attacks and the attackers. And in the final against Barcelona, Real Madrid came as a strong favorite. But we all know that whatever the context, it doesn't matter that much in El Clásico, because I remember, for example, Barcelona beating Real Madrid 4-0 a couple of years ago at Santiago Bernabeu when Real Madrid won both La Liga and the Champions League. But this time, Real Madrid knew that they were the favorites. They were helped by Barcelona's and Xavi's, in particular, game plan, because Barcelona had a really, really high line defense. And Real Madrid capitalized. By the 10th minute, they were winning 2-0, 4-0, 4-1 at the end, with Vinicius scoring a hat-trick, and one of the best performances of Vinicius, not only this season, because he's been injured for most of it, but also in his career. And before this, he had never scored more than 3 goals against Barcelona, I believe, and he scored 3 in a game. So this is a game that obviously showcases how strong Real Madrid can be. They've got everything, in my opinion. Even they've got a number 9 who is not a top striker, but still he offers the profile of a number 9. 4 players who are on course to score 20 goals or more this season, which is what big teams have. A good defense despite the absences of Militao and David Alaba. David Alaba and Militao are not likely to play this season, especially Eder Militao. The goalkeeper is not there. Lunin is doing good performances. He's playing well. He didn't play the semi-final, but he did play the final. And I think that, you know, it's a very, very hard defeat to accept for Barcelona.
Yeah. You talk about the kind of one-dimensionality of Xavi's approach. What about Ancelotti? How much of the success that they're having at the moment is down to him? And how much is it the fact that they've got a team with Bellingham and with the amazing Vinny Jr.?
Well, I think that, number one, Real Madrid's squad planning has been really good over the years. So this is something that we have to give to Real Madrid and to their scouters and to, you know, as we call it in Spain, the filosofía deportiva. But then, when it comes to Ancelotti, you have to give him the praise as well, because he has used Jude Bellingham in different positions this season. He was needed at the beginning of the season as a number 10. He has played in more deep positions as the season went by because, you know, Real Madrid had many players injured. Then Vinicius is not a winger this season, for example. Benzema left. Vinicius is playing more in central channels as well. He has gotten the best of a player like Fede Valverde. And little by little, Tchouaméni is also becoming very important.
Brahim Diaz as well. I enjoyed that fifth goal in the semi-final where he had the foot race against Oblak.
That was a very funny race to watch, actually. It was like a, I don't know how to put it, like a, you know, in if you draw a cartoon of that fight, it would be very, very, very funny because it was a very big man just racing against a really, really fast, short striker. And, you know, Brahim has been one of the good additions of the season. Asensio left, Benzema left, and Joselu and Brahim and Arda Güler arrived. And obviously, there was an adaptation for Brahim at the beginning of the season, didn't play much. But he has become the player number 12 this season. And back to Ancelotti, we always talk about how good he is as an administrative guy, and his way of dealing with problems is second to none. He's been working with Berlusconi, with Florentino, he's been at Chelsea, you know, big clubs, Paris Saint-Germain. But the good thing about Carlo Ancelotti is that even when Real Madrid wasn't well, there was never any questioning about him because he dismisses the problems very well in the press conference. I mean, Carlo Ancelotti does about 100 press conferences a season, and he's never... He always knows how to defend himself, how to send the right message for the club. Last season, a year ago, Real Madrid lost the Super Cup to Barcelona. They weren't in the title race by April, and they lost 4-0 in a Champions League semi-final. And there were never doubts about Carlo Ancelotti staying in the club. Compare that to Xavi, back to Xavi. He has lost the Super Cup this year, 4-1 in the final against Real Madrid. Real Madrid lost the final last year as well in the Super Cup. Xavi has lost it. But his message is not convincing. You can really tell that his message is contradictory in the press conferences as well. Sometimes he looks like a man who has too much to deal with. Ancelotti never looks like this. And I think that that's also a big part of Ancelotti. He knows how to do these things. Even when the club is in a small sporting crisis, he knows how to defend it and he knows how to send the right message across. Xavi, for example, cannot do that. That's why today, on Tuesday, Xavi is under heavy questioning. And Ancelotti last year was not. And let's don't forget that Xavi, 5 months ago or 6 months ago, he won the Spanish title.
It's a bit harsh, though, to compare, considering Xavi has been,
certainly
as a European manager. I know he managed in Qatar before, and he's a much younger, obviously. You would expect that maybe Carlo at the same age as Xavi in a similar position.
Yeah, Carlo's early years at Parma, weren't
they? Yeah.
Reggiana, even before that, yeah. Sorry, Regina. yes. All right. Was Xavi calling it Barcelona's worst game? He's under pressure now. Prospect that Barcelona might be looking to make a change?
The thing is that there is no clear candidate that you will say, all right, he's going to come back, or Barcelona are going to appoint this man, and this man is going to steer the ship in the right direction. Because one of the candidates is Rafa Márquez, who is with Barcelona B, the second team of Barcelona. Rafa Márquez, does he have the credentials to be Barcelona's manager? Or to be the savior of the team? Obviously not yet.
Last time they got a manager from their B team, worked out pretty well.
It worked very well.
Yeah.
But it was Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola has been always an ideologist, even when he was a player.
Yeah.
I don't know if Rafa Márquez was that man. But very quickly, we shouldn't remove from this equation and from this conversation Barcelona's financial struggles. I mean, if you want to play big and you want to go for a big manager, number one, you have to sack Xavi, who extended his contract back in November or October. And number two, you have to pay big bucks for another manager.
Yeah.
And who is available? Number
Jose
one.
Mourinho.
He's available.
Back at the club.
He worked for Barcelona. Yeah, that's true. But he will never be the man. You have to pay big. And I don't think Barcelona is capable of paying big salaries right now.
Okay.
That's the big thing.
All right, Avro. I want to move you on to a little game that I don't know if you saw, but there was a Basque derby this weekend.
Yeah.
High-flying Real Sociedad had their wings clipped by Athletic Club de Bilbao.
They haven't flew high for a long time.
Have they not?
No. They All haven't.
Right. But they are where they want to be.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, in the Champions League last 16 against your lot.
Yeah.
Be careful. Yeah. And in the
although when I watched them play on at the weekend, they didn't scare me.
No, they weren't because we
let's talk about
suppressed
athletic,
them.
Though.
We suppressed them, yeah.
You were so good.
Let's put it that way. Iñaki Williams is in Africa playing the AFCON.
Mm.
And in
Nico's
his absence,
not,
Nico is not, and Nico is still terrifying defenses with his runs. Then Berenguer has stepped up, he scored a brace against Real Sociedad. And, we beat them in style. I would say that the team has navigated very well through a couple of key injuries and a couple of key departures, one of them Íñigo Martínez, especially, who is at Barcelona. But the defense looks kind of solid. We are scoring so many goals, almost as many as Girona and Real Madrid, which is incredible, really. And I think that this is a moment in which Athletic Club Bilbao can genuinely believe that they can qualify for the Champions League.
You're up to third.
Yeah.
Up to third.
And the last time we qualified for the Champions League, it was Ernesto Valverde, our coach, as well, so he knows how to do this. We are not involved in European competition, as some other clubs. Then footballers like Yuri Berchiche, who is our best left-back and another attacker in many ways, has recovered his best form. And the youth of the squad and the energy of the squad, it's something that some teams are not able to tackle. I remember Atletico de Madrid going at Bilbao and being outpaced and outmuscled, which is something that normally you don't do with Atletico de Madrid. If we don't have any key injuries, because there are two or three players that are absolutely irreplaceable, Nico Williams or Jan Sanzet, obviously the goalkeeper, Unai Simón, then I think that we have a good chance of being there in the mix for the Champions League race, probably until the very end.
Okay. Well, level on points with Barcelona, but ahead on what? Goal difference. You're in third place above the Catalans. Only 3 points above Atletico Madrid, who you've kind of pushed out into fifth spot of late. At the top of the table, Girona, who you mentioned all the goals they're scoring, they didn't get any this weekend. They were playing the only team in Europe's top five leagues yet to win a football match. That's Almeria. And they ended up drawing 0-0. Crikey. Best
they
attacking.
They should have lost as well. They should have lost. They had two shots. I think the whole game were three shots.
They're 1 point ahead of Real Madrid, still at the top, but Real have a game in hand, having, of course, missed this weekend's action because they were in Riyadh.
Exactly. They are topping the table, but the weekend was very disappointing for them. Mm. And Jus is right. Almeria had all the chances. Mm. The thing is that, as Gaizka Garitano, the manager of Almeria, said after the game, they've been playing without the proper number nine for 3 months because they had injuries. And now the club doesn't know whether to go to the market and find a number nine. Because, number one, which number nine is going to sign for you if the next season you're going to be in the second division? And number two, why should Almeria invest on a season that is pretty much gone?
Indeed.
But, you know, they missed many chances. Almeria should have won that game. And it's probably also an alert bell for Girona as well. If they don't play 100% as they did the other day, and if they don't go at it in a game that is winnable, then they are not like Real Madrid. They are not like a big side that they can rely on a couple of moments of brilliance just to win a football game.
Alrighty. Excellent. Alvaro, thank you so much for that.
Just a bit of love for Antoine Griezmann.
A lot, absolutely.
A bit more because now he's the all-time goal scorer.
Oh,
record.
He moved past
with Aragones. And I think that was very special, even if they lost that semi-final.
Yeah.
But that 174th goal for the club was very special. And how much he loves that club as well. I think it meant a lot to him.
Very nice, Jules. Mm. Very nice.
By the way, keep an eye on Valencia, guys. Maybe we'll talk about them in the following
three
week.
Three straight wins. They're up to eighth.
And they've got many Spanish under-21 internationals.
Mm.
And they are an attacking side.
All right.
And for the first time in a long time, we're not talking about the manager saying, if you don't invest money, I'm leaving. Baraja is a club man. He's going to accept anything. And perhaps this season, Valencia is a capable team of qualifying for the Conference League. I would like to see that.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Next week, if they can make it 4 wins out of 4, they are going to be at home to your friends, Athletic Club de Bilbao. So, huge match. No doubt we're going to be talking about that next Tuesday, Alvaro. Next up, bit of word on the Eredivisie, and then, boom, the Bundesliga.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Kayoko. Aangeraakt, daar is Romaglio. Oh, dat is een assist van Romaglio. Zonder dat het de bedoeling was. En het is een hat-trick voor Luc de Jong.
Why Eredivisie, James? Well, PSV got their 17th win of the league season on Saturday night. That was against Excelsior. They played 70 games. They won all of them. That equals the Eredivisie record for the best ever winning run, which they set themselves, actually, way back in 87-88, when they went on to win the treble, European champions that season.
They won the European Cup, if you remember, on penalties in the final, in the semi-final, in the quarter-final. But it still counts.
Still.
It was amazing. But they scored 59 goals in those 17 games and conceded 7. It's just, I don't think any team, even not their team in 87-88, has ever dominated a league like this.
So what does that say to you, given when they go into the Champions League, it doesn't work out like that at all?
Well, no, only Arsenal have beaten them this season in the Champions League group stage.
Is that right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, so their only defeat all season is against that Arsenal at the Emirates, where I think, and I remember on the goal show we were saying that I think they kind of went at it too much and they got battered in that first half. Especially.
There are those, Jules, I don't know if any of them are here in this room, who mock Peter Bosch.
Certainly two or four in this room, yeah.
Right, okay. Who mock Peter Bosch, but he seems to know what he's doing all right there. 17 wins out of 17.
Yeah, I would say as well, and I don't want to diss him because this is a great record and I don't want to prove Rafa and I right.
Right.
This is not a really good Eredivisie right now. Ajax are not good. They know they're certainly not as good as they were in the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. AZ Alkmaar, a good team, but again, so no, it's still amazing, but you know the level of the league, I think this season certainly is not as strong as it has been in the past.
Okay, well, PSV are going to be at Utrecht on Sunday night, looking to see if they can make it, 18 out of 18, which would set a new record for football in the Netherlands. Rafa, let's talk about Germany. Yes. Bundesliga return this weekend.
Yes, we're back, baby.
Finally.
Jane Sancho back and like he'd never been away. Dortmunder Sicht in dieser Begegnung kommt sie auf Jadon Sancho. Sancho nicht quer
und Marco Reus macht das 2-0. I mean, he was remarkably sharp. I thought that he might come with a bit of baggage, both figuratively and physically.
He doesn't like to carry baggage, I don't think.
Yes, but you know, when you don't play for 4 months. Sometimes you're not quite at the right fitness level, but he looked very, very up for it. He was tracking back, he was sprinting, he moved very freely, and he came on before the hour mark and had a really good impact, of course, especially when he set up the goal for Marco Reus, who was also a substitute. But yeah, Dortmund, I think, apart from winning 3-0, which was, of course, a very good result against the worst team in the league, Darmstadt, feel really optimistic all of a sudden that he can be a big factor for the second half of the season for them.
Yeah, he was smiling again, but it was noticeable how they all seemed to be delighted to have him back as well. Marco Reus, the way he celebrated that goal with a kind of warm embrace. It was quite touching. He'd come on, Sancho, for Jamie Bynoe-Gittens, who'd had a big role in the opening goal.
Yeah, Bynoe-Gittens made that goal. He picked up the ball really deep in the Borussia half or certainly near the halfway line and then skipped past two players and then set up. Julian Brandt, who made a great run across the defenders. They made that classic run. Him and I think Daniel Marlin, where one goes one way, one goes the other. They sort of cross each other's path and tore that Darmstadt defense two ways. And slightly scuffed, but at the end, very effective finish from Julian Brandt gave them the lead. And Dortmund were shaky in the first half an hour. All the problems that we talked about came to the fore again. Their build-up play is pretty lousy. Their passing is ropey. They don't really have that much of a presence. Niklas Füllkrug was not really a factor. But they have individual players who can just turn it on. And Bynoe-Gittens for the first goal. Reus and Schanz. Royce and Sancho for the second, Mukoko for the third.
What a goal, eh?
What
goal.
Lovely finish.
Yeah.
I still think that there are issues there. And the biggest one of all, perhaps, is Niki Süle, because he is supposed to be such a key player. And even though Mats Hummels was injured, Emre Can, the midfielder, was preferred to him at the heart of the Dortmund defence, because Süle came back from the Christmas holidays, unlike Jadon Sancho, in really bad shape.
Really?
Looked
really?
Very, very sluggish throughout the Marbella training camp. And it's just in no position to start a game at the moment. And for somebody who wants to be at the Euros, it's not good enough. And the club, I think, increasingly are putting public pressure on him. And this was very much a warning shot, with Can being preferred to him, that he really needs to start improving very, very quickly.
Now that Sancho is in, if you were the coach, if you were Terzic, what would be the front line that you would pick, or which one do you think he would pick? If everybody's fit, let's say.
I think Sancho will start.
So Sancho on the left?
Well, in the game, he changed positions. The goal came from the right, mm-hmm. mostly played on the left, but him and Marlon kept changing positions. I think Sancho has to play. I think Brandt has to play. That makes it difficult for Royce, unless you put Brandt on the left and Royce through the middle. But in terms of the names, that's probably your strongest lineup at the moment. You're missing a little bit of pace, if that's the setup. Maybe away from home, you hope that Adeyemi is fit again, or you prefer Banu Gittins or Marlon for a more direct approach. But I think just the fact that you have him available now, he will make everyone better and create space. And if he can keep that level, it's going to look like an absolute inspired piece of business for Dortmund.
Absolutely. What happens at the end of the season, Rafa?
Nothing. He's going to go back home. I mean, the thing is,
he says this is his home, though.
Yeah, that's true. His football home, maybe. The problem is that if he does really well, Dortmund will not be able to keep him, because both the wages and the existing value that's going to come up again are going to make it effectively impossible for them to buy him, unless United are prepared to take a huge cut, and it's, I think, very unlikely. Why would they? But either of them. If he doesn't do well, then maybe United say, let's cut our losses. But even that is a very unrealistic scenario. And even then, why would Dortmund then pay a lot of money for a player who hasn't done well? Yeah. So they're all saying it's very unrealistic that he will stay unless something dramatic happens. I think it's much more likely that he'll go back and play for United, perhaps under a different manager next year.
That's the thing, that the story can take a different turn if the Manchester United gets a new manager, and in the press conference he says, you know what, Jadon Sancho is in my plans and he's going to be pivotal in this project. I mean, that's a possibility. We have seen things like this happen.
We certainly have. All right, well, Dortmund for now are fifth. They're only 3 points behind Leipzig and 4 behind Stuttgart in fourth and third, respectively, after those two teams both lost this weekend. Top two winning, as you mentioned earlier, Bayer Leverkusen leaving it late in their game with Augsburg, but Bayern comfortable enough in their clash with Hoffenheim, 3-0?
Yeah, they had one or two shaky moments where Manuel Neuer had to make some big saves, but yeah, overall I think they were reasonably comfortable. Thomas Tuchel quite happy with the performance, two fine goals from Musiala, and of course the inevitable Harry Kane doing his bit to make Robert Lewandowski, I think, increasingly nervous that his all-time Bundesliga record might fall for goals.
So Kane's on 22 and the record is 41.
But Bayern have only played 16 games. So 22 and 16 is pretty good. And I think anyone who'd seen Bayern this year would probably agree that they actually haven't played all that well, especially going forward. And I think there is another level for them to go to. And if they reach that, if they start winning games 5-0, 6-0, as the Pep Guardiola Bayern used to do, a few results like that under Hansi Flick as well, then Kane might find it even easier to break that record. So, yeah, it's shaping up to be an interesting season. This week, James, a little bit like me, they're in warm weather. They have a warm weather training break.
Nice.
In Faro.
Okay, in Portugal. Will you going along?
No, I'm not going. Unfortunately, there's no press activities planned.
Ah, okay.
the emphasis very much on team building and tactics.
Mm.
Tuchel a little bit annoyed because the whole area, the campus, is readily accessible. So all the journalists are standing there filming every training, watching everything, and you can't hide. You don't have those big sort of curtains that like you can fences, put up as you do at Säbener Straße. But still, I think there are worse places to be, especially if you're considering that in Munich it's been minus 15.
Minus 15.
In recent days. So, yeah, they're in decent shape, I would say.
Minus 15, like Dortmund from Leverkusen. Yeah.
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 Yeah, indeed, James.
All right.
Leverkusen going to Leipzig next week. That's a massive game.
Yeah.
And increasingly people are saying, well, I don't know how many people are saying it, but Dimitar Berbatov was saying it when I spoke to him briefly at Old Trafford on Sunday.
Okay.
That he thinks Leverkusen can go unbeaten, which is something that's never been done.
Never been done.
In the Bundesliga.
Mm. Also, on the subject of Dortmund, you were talking to perhaps the most powerful man in German football.
I think he is. Hans-Joachim Watzke is on the UEFA Exco. He's the vice chairman of the league. He's the vice chairman of the FA. And he's the chief executive for Borussia Dortmund. So I don't think you can get any more important powerful roles. And I was talking to him about all these big subjects, you know, the Club World Cup, the new Champions League format, the investment in the Bundesliga, 50+1 rule, can it stay, what do Germans want? And I thought he was very straightforward and very, insightful. So
okay,
you're a big fan, I know.
I'm a big fan.
You would have already read it.
And he's leaving soon as well, so that's probably one of the big interviews.
He's stepping down. Mm. He announced his stepping down in autumn of next year, 2025, during the training camp with Marbella, a couple of days after the interview. But I think he still will be in the club, maybe become the new president. Mm. A bit like Uli Hoeneß has done and others. So I don't think he'll be really gone.
All right, that interview is available right now at theathletic.com. Rafa, before we leave the subject of German football, some breaking news that you've just received.
Yeah, really sad news. Kai Bernstein, the president of Hertha BSC, passed away, only 43, very sudden. He was the first former ultra to become president of a big Bundesliga side. Now, of course, in Division 2, but yeah, it's a real shock. Hertha have not released any more details, asking for the privacy of the family to be respected, but very unexpected and very sad.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Hernandez, che di fronte a sé un avversario, il colpo di tacco di giro ancora per Hernandez, sinistro, rete splendida di Hernandez, che chiude la partita con un fendente sotto la traversa.
City Angels, did you watch Milan's 3-1 win over Roma? Because of course you're connazionale.
Yeah.
Les Français.
It was a French party, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So good.
Three French goal scorers for Milan.
Yeah. Yassine Adli,
yeah,
Olivier Giroud.
Giroud, of course. And then how about that third goal from Theo Hernandez?
The 1-2 between Theo and Giroud, the backheel assist from Giroud, and then the finish as well. It was great. I mean, I don't think that Milan had to play particularly well because I thought Roma were dreadful, to be honest. And we know that when Dybala is not there, they lack a lot of creativity anyway.
Described in La Gazzetta as both Roma's carriage and their pumpkin.
Yeah, nice little, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Mm. But anyway, yeah, so Roma not much cop. Milan, though, back in form now. That's now 4 wins in 5 in all competitions. They've scored 12 goals in those four victories, across those 5 games, actually, and only conceded 5, which we remember how they were struggling to score.
Yeah, and Benacer is at AFCON with Algeria, for example, so he's not there. There was a lovely nutmeg from Pulisic and Pellegrini that I really, really loved. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. Yeah, it's just all good. And again, I think we need to highlight the really poor level of this Roma side. But still for Milan, and Pioli was very happy and rightly so after the game.
Yeah, absolutely. There are ways off the top of the table where it is still Inter, their neighbours, and Juve who are battling it out. Currently 5 points between the two, but that's because Juve haven't played their game this round yet. That's going to be happening this evening when they're up against Sassuolo, Tuesday night. Inter at the weekend going to Monza just down the road, and beating them 5-1. A brace for Lautaro Martinez, and also for Hakan Çalhanoğlu. First time in Italy that he's managed to get two goals. Super Coppa, in fact, because this midweek we've got Thursday, Napoli against Fiorentina.
Yeah.
Away in Saudi Arabia, you recall they weren't sure of the Saudis if they could find room for the Italian Super Cup players. Look, but they did.
A good thing is that there will be no minute of silence for Franz Beckenbauer anymore, because I found it, I'm sorry to talk about this now, but they're so classless that the supporters in Saudi Arabia booed the minute of silence for Franz Beckenbauer.
Yeah,
for a
nice.
Dead man. It was
but
really
it wasn't
classless.
Even a minute of silence because they played some music, no?
Yeah,
well, that minute of tribute.
What did they go for? What kind of music did they play?
To know some kind of
sad music, sad jingle. Yeah.
All right. Oh, well. Yeah, hopefully nothing like
hopefully
that happens.
Won't happen.
Okay, so Thursday, it's Napoli against Fiorentina. Napoli, who actually got a win in their derby against Salernitana.
Very, very late, though. Hakmani.
Yeah. And then on Friday, you've got Inter against Lazio. And then the final is on Monday.
Why is it Thursday, Friday?
I think on Sunday it was booked for the puppet show, the Al Awal Stadium.
That
so
is crazy.
They fitted them in on Monday.
And Mauricio Sarri not happy, obviously.
Well,
why are we going? Like, just take
Sarri's been in amazing form of late. So last week they got the derby win over Roma, which is one of the reasons, you know, as we heard that Mu's out on his ear. Sarri responding to that, I could not have cared less about qualifying for the next round of the Coppa Italia. But you need to win the derby for your people. So that's nice.
Yeah.
And then he's asked about the Super Cup. He said, it's take the money and run. It's anything but sport.
I love it.
He's right.
To be fair, we really all want an Inter-Fiorentina final, because seeing the form of Napoli right now and Lazio, that's not going to be fun. Fiorentina playing really good football, even if at the weekend they struggled a little bit, only got a draw. And Inter are Inter. So I would love an Inter-Fiorentina final on Monday.
Okay. Shout out to our friend Claudio Ranieri and his Cagliari side. He's really turning things around there in Sardinia. Big win for them this weekend when they defeated Champions League hopefuls, or at least top four hopefuls, Bologna, 2-1, keeping themselves a point outside of the relegation zone. Super. We'll have much more on Serie A next week. But right now, I can't wait any longer to talk Ligue 1. Ligue 1, Jules. What do we got here? Right, Paris Saint-Germain, a win for them.
Come on!
That's right. This time,
that's all the analysis.
No, because lots of ways, it's a tough.
Yeah,
tough
team who almost pipped them to the title last time around.
And those clashes have been coming a bit like Liga, kind of.
Barcola,
epic. Yeah.
Quality dribbling.
Yeah. Since I think he watched that replay of the goal show after his Newcastle performance at the Parc des Princes, where we destroyed him. Bobby Bacala has been much better, and certainly you're right, Alvaro. He was very good on Sunday night on the left-hand side with Mbappe central and Dembele on the right. He scored the first goal, lovely finish. By the way, I've said many times, even if you're right-footed, when the ball comes from your right-hand side, control it with the inside of your left foot, which he did, and then finish with your right foot like he did.
Any young players out there listening to this?
Of course. Yep. Or wait, even if you're right-footed and you're tempted to control it with the outside of your right foot, if the ball comes from your right.
If you're left-footed, comes from your left.
Exactly. Control it with your right foot.
Right
That's
foot.
What Pep Guardiola says.
All right.
And then he obviously got Gradit sent off just before the break with a lovely kind of slalom, and then Gradit fouled him as the last defender, so it was a red card. And Mbappe seemed to really enjoy playing as a nine with Dembele and Barcola ahead of him.
So, yeah, that seems new, the fact that he's...
So 6 weeks now, and Luis Enrique...
But knew that he's enjoying it. I mean,
yeah,
kind of
knew that he's enjoying it. You're right. He touched the ball 78 times on Sunday night, which for a number nine, even like him, who wants to be involved a lot in the... build a play and link, all of that is a lot. So, he seems to be really, really enjoying it.
Okay. They're 8 points clear now, Paris Saint-Germain, because both Nice and Monaco lost. Brest moving past Monaco into third place after the Monégasques, a 3-1 defeat at home to your friend Will Still and Reims.
Yeah.
Will Still listening to the show, right?
Is he? Yeah, he is. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I think he's doing a...
What did he say? Has he given you any feedback on Ligue 1 coverage?
No, he said there's a bit too much Serie A coverage and not enough Ligue 1. That's what he said. So I don't know.
Do you think he actually listens or he was just guessing? Just guessing.
No, but they're six in the table. We said that in the moment of the weekend. Mm. They're doing really, really well. They host to Nantes next weekend, or this weekend coming, which Nantes is struggling under new manager Jocelyn Gourvennec. So it's another opportunity for them to try to get closer to the Champions League positions, because I think that race, the title is gone for Nice and everybody. PSG will win that. But then from second to sixth, it's really, really interesting, I think. So Nice struggled at Rennes. They were really poor. Mm. And Mofi played, but then obviously went to replace Boniface with Nigeria. Monaco, as we said, without Minamino, struggling a little bit too. So behind, it's well open for Brest and your friend Brassier. And also for Reims and Will Steel.
Amazing.
Brassier was outstanding, by the way, the weekend.
Yeah.
Brest, yeah.
Stood really, out. Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was really, really excellent.
Good. No further questions, Your Honour. Although, I did notice that Rennes do seem to have a bit of an issue with Nemanja Matic.
Yeah, very
What's
much so.
There?
It's a great story, I think, that we haven't really reported. When he signed in the summer, Rennes said to him, listen, he's got three children.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed a place, a school for secondary school, primary school, and kind of nursery school.
Mm.
And they said, yes, we've got this place there. It's great. They've got, they said to him, they've got an English, like...
international school?
It's not technically an international school, but they have a class where English is put forward more. So you've got half in French, half in English, basically.
Okay, right.
He seemed to understand that it was only a full international school where everything was in English.
Right.
So one of the reasons that he mentioned to want to leave in January was because he said the club lied to me. They told me there was an international school for my kids. My kids are very important. My family is very important. And it's not an international school. To what the club responded saying, well, from the beginning, we told you what it was. We sent you the link for the website of that school for you to go and see. You went to visit the school. So you were very much aware it was not a full international school. He wants to leave.
He ran away.
He ran away completely. He disappeared. And I think the club were really disappointed because he didn't pick up the phone, didn't say anything. It was really, really... For someone like him, maybe he's not happy in Rennes, which you can be. But for someone of his experience and his kind of like status, to go like AWOL like this and disappear completely, such a lack of respect. I think it's very, very disappointing.
Right. Are there any other options in the Rennes area in terms of international schooling?
No, he would like to go to Lyon.
Would he?
Why would you want to swap Rennes for Lyon? Apart from, football-wise, makes no sense.
Yeah.
Then it's a bigger city. I think they have an international school maybe there.
Great food.
I'm not even sure.
Nice weather.
But food in Rennes is great too.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Lovely, lovely.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. I don't know where he was going to go. Today there's a big meeting with him and the sporting director, the coach and the president. So we will know a bit more. But the club don't really want him back, to be fair, after what he did. So,
yeah. You know. There you go.
Yeah, it's a good segue quickly on Lyon.
Okay.
Our friend Stone Wise, who after three wins in a row, we thought, yeah, here we go. And they got absolutely thrashed at Le Havre, where Hugo Lloris, his brother, Gauthier, played really well and scored. And I think the start of the weekend in all our leagues is that Lyon got two players sent off in this game, O'Brien and Doulita Tsar. And they made four fouls. So out of four fouls, they got two red cards, which I think must have never been done before.
Well, what were they sent off? Was it dissent or something like that?
No, so O'Brien was like a harsh, like both were harsh tackles.
Mm.
But when you just make four fouls, how can you get 2 players sent? It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Yeah. All right. What's coming up for Lyon? They are at the weekend.
What are they doing to us? Maybe?
Are they at Rennes?
They are.
They're at home to Rennes.
Yeah.
Marseille face Monaco. That's a big game.
That's
down
massive.
On the south coast.
Yeah. There's a few big games, we said, in all our leagues this weekend coming.
We'll be discussing all of those things next Tuesday, when hopefully all of us are going to be here.
Yep.
And we can have a nice big Totally Football Show European edition. For now, though, listener, that's it. Many, many thanks for your listening skills, which made today's show possible. And to Rafa and Alvaro and Jules and Rachel and Charlie. We're back on Thursday with a regular edition of the Totally. Perhaps you'll join us for that. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.